Can anyone hear me? I can't hear you.
I can hear you, Jim. This is Sally.
Okay. I can't hear the meeting though.
I can't either.
Okay, well, I'll text Kathy here.
Working on it. Okay, how's that, Jim?
Well, I can hear you, Mike.
Okay. No. It's off. I'm off. Okay, so I guess we had a mute on the system here. So we've had our roll call and we have a quorum. And thanks, Jim, for responding there. And Councilmember Owen was reading the vision statement. Did we sit all the way through? Or?
Take three. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Thank you. Okay, that takes us on to swearing in new council members. And I'd first like to, I'm sorry, Council Member Lewis isn't here tonight, but I want to express my appreciation for her service on the council. And we actually have a little plaque for her to pass on to her, expressing our appreciation for her contributions during her term. So thank you, Councilmember Lewis. So that brings us to swearing in of new council members for seats C and D. Madam Clerk, take it away.
All right, if I could please have Miss Rachel Marie Patrick and Mr. Brian Mitchell Taylor, please come to the middle of the floor with me. I'm gonna have you guys face council. You guys don't need to be. That for you. All right, so what we'll do is I will start, you will both say your names first, Rachel, and then you, Brian, and then we'll continue to the rest of it together. Okay, raise your right hand. I,
Rachel Patrick,
Brian,
do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States,
defend the Constitution of the United States,
the Constitution of the State of Alaska,
the Constitution of the State of Alaska,
and the ordinances of the City of Gustavus,
City of Gustavus,
Alaska, and that I will honestly and faithfully and impartially discharge my duties as council members of the City of Gustavus to the best of my ability. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
If you can both come in first.
And fine.
Okay, well, we're a second-class city, and second-class city, the mayor is elected annually by the council as a member of the council and serves for 1 year. And it's been an honor for me to serve as mayor, actually for the last couple of years. And I did write a mayor's report that look at or not at the end of the meeting that reviews some of the things we got done this year that I feel pretty good about with the help of our strong staff and volunteers and so forth. We've had a pretty good year. And so with that, I'm delighted to step down and turn the floor over to the vice mayor to lead us through the election of mayor for the next term. So, Vice Mayor Bishop, please.
Thank you. At this point, I'd like to open the floor to accept nominations from the council to the elect to elect the mayor for 2023-2024.
Okay, Mr. Vice Mayor, I nominate Kyle Bishop for mayor.
I'll second that.
I'd like to nominate Shelley Owens for mayor.
I'll second. Any other nominations? Guess I'll close the floor.
Okay.
Do this is I'm going to pass around a piece of paper for each person to cast their vote. We'll do, we'll pass around a piece of paper for the first nomination, and if there are less than four, let's see, one, two, three, five. If there's less than four, then we'll go to the second nomination, which would be first one was Shelley, and the second, no, the first one was Kyle, second one was Shelley.
If I can, just a point of order here, looking at our, I guess our sheet here, and I know there's an item where the nominees are offered an opportunity to accept or decline the nomination. Do we need a,
yeah, is that?
Well, it could be before the vote, yeah.
Yeah, it's listed before the vote. So if you or Shelley wanted to decline, then we don't have to go through the
vote. Then I decline.
Okay, then you can ask if it's unanimous consent on that.
Are there any objections, or do we have a unanimous consent? Hearing none. Shelley Owens.
You get to take over from here. But you've got a cheat sheet. And would you like a paper copy of this to work from? Find it helpful?
You've got my phone work.
Thank you. Okay. I open the floor to accept nominations from the council to elect the vice mayor for the 2023-2024 term.
I'd like to nominate Brian Taylor.
I second.
And I'd like to nominate Kyle Bishop.
I'll second.
Are there any additional nominations from the floor? Okay, no additional nominations being heard. I close the floor for nominations. Are there any objections for nominee Brian Taylor to serve the 2023-2024 term as vice mayor?
No objection for me. I was going to raise a point of order because it sounds like you're going through the steps for unanimous consent. Did we? Since we have two nominees, do we need to go through a vote or do we need to offer either of us the opportunity to decline the nomination.
Okay.
Like we did with the...
I'll offer the nominees the opportunity to decline the nomination at this time.
No, I'm happy to leave it to a vote. That'd be interesting. Yeah, let's do a vote.
Okay, and at this point, could the clerk conduct a vote?
Councilmember Makoviak, if you could send your vote to both the clerk and city administrator to be counted.
Yeah, Karen, I just sent it.
Just give the clerk a moment and we'll have the results with you in a second.
Our new vice mayor will be Brian Taylor with the majority vote.
Okay, well, congratulations to Vice Mayor Taylor.
Thank you.
And we'll move on. I believe that Councilmember Moskoviak is going to make a motion to approve the general meeting minutes from the September 11th, 2023 meeting.
Get it up on my cheat sheet here. Okay, I move to approve by unanimous consent the September 11th, 2023 general meeting minutes.
Second.
Okay, first meeting. It is moved and seconded that the meeting minutes from September 11th, 2023 are approved by unanimous consent. Does anyone object?
Do we need to ask if there are any additions or corrections? The public has any or...
Okay, thank you. The minutes have been previously distributed. Do any members of the public wish to offer any additions or corrections to the minutes? Are there any hands raised online? None? No one in the room? Okay. Do any council members wish to make any additions or corrections to the minutes? Shaking of head. Are there any objections to passing the September 11th, 2023 general meeting minutes? Hearing none, motion is passed by unanimous consent. Are there any requests from the council for agenda changes? And Jim isn't raising his hand. Are there any objections to adopting the agenda by unanimous consent? Okay, hearing no objections, the agenda is set by unanimous consent. Next up are committee reports and staff reports. I would invite the presenters in order listed to speak. State your name, department, and keep reports to 5 minutes or less. And the council will have an opportunity to ask clarifying questions. First up is Gustavus Volunteer Fire Department. Quarterly report, Chief Martinez.
Thank you, Mayor Owens, and thank you, Mike Taylor, for your service the last couple of years. I think it's kind of move on to my, I called into my training season as new volunteers have they'll have more time to actually do a little bit more training, do a little bit longer training in winter more than the summertime. Things get a little bit more on the visitor side. One thing that I wanted to point out, if you haven't noticed already, the big wooden pool that was our antenna is now gone. We replaced it with an actual tower that's set up behind the fire hall. Currently, there's no way, there's no fence or, I guess, plywood around it to stop people from climbing. I ask people, please do not climb it, despite how tempting it is. I'd rather not have a call behind our fire hall, despite how convenient that could be. Other things have come up. We're dealing with maintenance issues with both the fire engine and the ambulance. The fire engine is all right, still operational, and I know what the issue is. Just got to get in the middle of all the pipes to do it. The ambulance is a little bit of an issue. Had a issue with the, I believe it was the steering and brake booster pump, which is now replaced, and now we're having issues with the alternators, which is hopefully going to be replaced tomorrow. The part of the alternator came in sometime over the weekend, so which the last part we're waiting on, so that should be fixed tomorrow, and hopefully that was it. Pretty sure it is. Last week of September, Johan and I went on the 2023 fire conference. As you, for the people who have been here last year, it happens every year. So this year, it's a conference in which bunch of firefighters get together to pull together trainings. Different speakers come in. There's a bunch, a lot of information useful. The first 2 days for me, it was mainly a lot of is engine operations class, going over just different types of ways we can fight a fire. Basically from the hose into the fire, strategies and all that. The third day was mainly a lot of just, it was actually the official opening ceremony. So it was not many classes or anything like that. There was a little bit of speaking, a little bit of that. The third day was the more of a class. The first half, the Thursday was all day class, the of which operations of more of like more of a talk on how one department fights their fires and how they set up the loads and how they deal with it. The third day was a half day for me, as my second half of the day was canceled. But other than that, it was on firefighter health, on more on like how this person's studies have led to his office actually dedicated to more of first responders, not just for firefighters, but for EMS and police, how his studies work on, trying to find the right term, basically develop health for long-term health for first responders, say how it led to basically nutrition and exercise and sleep. The something that did change, I know I mentioned this in my last core report, but finally I'm able to say I am a basic EMS instructor. This is allows me to certify myself to actually have certified EMS trainings and also teach ETT and EMT1 classes. So hopefully in the future I'll be able to teach more classes to the volunteers. As new volunteers come in, I'll be able to teach them on a cheaper scale. The one item that's on the that I think's on the agenda NCO tonight, I believe, is kind of a lot of funding going into the fire department as well as others. But one of his a lot of training, which we like to do and continue on doing, as far as bringing in instructors. The one big item that I would hopefully get past is something called regroup, something I alluded to. And it's basically a way to notify people through the cell service phones. So it's stuff like, for our emergency ends, it's more of like a wildland fire, tsunami, big events that cause health and safety issues. If we're able to purchase that, it's another way to notify people in ways we may not be able to without. Other than that, just want to thank you again. And as always, we are looking for volunteers, responders, EMS, firefighters alike. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me. If you're interested in volunteering for the fire department, contact me again. I have no issue taking a phone call, coming to the fire hall, answering questions. So I leave it up to.
Okay, thank you, Chief Martinez. Do any of the council members have clarifying questions that they'd like to ask him?
So I'm just curious, in terms of the maintenance of the vehicles, do you do it, or does somebody, do we contract to do it, or how does it get done?
It's a bit of both. If it's something I can do, I will be able to do it. Where my shortfall lands is in diagnosing. And as far as where the ambulance goes, that was actually, it was Doug Sear, that fixed the ambulance, and he's working on the alternator. That wasn't as obvious to me, so I had to contract that out. As far as the fire engine goes, there's one issue I've been struggling with and trying to figure out, but there's the one other issue I'm pretty sure I know what it is because, well, it's leaking from that spot. So it's something I can take apart. It's just like a lot of pipes, the leaks always seems to be in the middle of the pipes and everything. So it's gonna be a little bit more of a difficult side, but it's something I can do.
Okay, great, thanks. Thanks for working on that. Yeah. And then just one just quick question in terms of the volunteers and stuff. What's the just a general amount of volunteers that we have in the EMT in the Davis now?
As for the firefighters or for every?
The EMT and just a ballpark.
Firefighter. Oh, so, okay. No. So we have about 18 volunteers right now. Seven or eight of them are dispatchers. And there's a mixture of people who are just fire and then just EMS or a bit of both. I don't really have the exact number for that part, but it's around currently 18 volunteers, but we're always looking for more.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Next up is City Clerk Liesl Barker with her quarterly report.
Hello, I'm Liesl Barker. I'm the new city clerk. I'll keep this short and sweet. I only have about 4 weeks to report on. They've been busy just getting my admin levels set up on our websites and learning all of the different websites that we use, like MuniCode. I had some training in Archive Social, things like that. I've spent a lot of time working with Karen Platt, the former city clerk, as well as Ben, our wonderful treasurer over there, learning some of the ins and outs of working at City Hall and how to do my job. I was able to become a member of the Alaska Association of Municipal Clerks, which was great. That will allow me to go to an upcoming training in December, updated some ordinance logs. And other than that, running the election has taken up a lot of my time, learned a lot, have some a lot more to continue learning. So right now I'm really looking forward to just getting in as many trainings as I can, to learn parliamentary procedures and more about my clerk job.
Do any council members have any clarifying questions of the clerk? Okay, Mr. Former Mayor.
Council Member Taylor. Do you want to say something about council training? I think we're still in the early stages of figuring out what to do. And it's something that I've found really helpful for every council member, regardless of whether we've been on the council for years or are new to it.
Yes.
It kind of gets us all on the same sheet of music. If we all attend the training, and particularly if we can all do it together, that may or may not be something that I don't know whether DCCED still does that.
What's that stand for?
Department of Commerce, Community and Regional
Economic
Development. there that, and we have a local government representative, Laura. Yura.
Yes, I have been talking with Yura. Yeah. So I know that we were hoping to send Rachel, our newest council member, as long as her schedule works with it, up to Anchorage for that training with the AML. Alaska Municipal League that first week in December. And I think we were hoping to open up one or two more seats to that for anybody else who was on council, if somebody wanted a refresher or would like to attend again. So kind of now's your time to speak up on that. If you would like to be considered for going to that, we'd like to get everybody training. I will definitely talk to Ayura and see if we can get him to come out here. I know that those are some things he's done in the past. And I know he had spoken with me about maybe coming out and giving me some clerk training before the next big RUBA training in February. They also have a RUBA training for newly elected officials, I believe in November. So that might be something we can also look into. I have a list of things from the prior clerk that we can kind of dive into in the next week or so and get people scheduled for it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
If I might, do you have a timeline for dates on when that AML conference might be?
The AML conference, it is the first week of December. I want to say it starts that Monday for everybody as grand opening ceremonies. I believe it's the 3rd or the 4th is the date. I don't have a calendar in front of me. And it runs through that Friday. Okay. There looks to be a lot of really good breakout sessions that would be pretty applicable to everybody in this room.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
And I can send an email with more information to all of you if that would be helpful.
Yeah, I would appreciate that.
We got to wait for Shelley. Sorry.
Okay. Janine.
Thanks. So I'm not sure why, but in my personal email, I get emails from something called Jurassic Parliament, and they're offering different trainings.
Yes.
And there's one for a newly elected survival guide, and that's in November, and it's online. And it was something I was interested in.
Yes. So that Jurassic Parliament, those are some of the ones that I'm looking at taking, as well as they have many online ones that I will try to compile and send out to you folks. And I got to get with Ben and see what our budget is for training as well. But those are definitely on our radar. There's also some that Aurora has that we can also do online, and they can be kind of self-paced for those of you who have a lot going on, you know, outside of City Hall as well, that we can work on.
Okay, so the Jurassic one says, does show on this special offer, buy two, get one free.
All right, I think I get those same emails. I think they come to the clerk email, but I will look into it.
All right, thanks.
And did I see that somebody else had their hand up?
Okay. Yeah, I was just gonna say that I went to AML a couple of years ago and wouldn't mind going again for a refresher. It was kind of a whirlwind when I went, but if anyone else hasn't been or is a little bit more eager and wants to go, and depending on the amount of spots that we have, I'd gladly yield that, but if it's just going to be a couple of us, I'd happily go again.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Okay. And the Marine Facilities Coordinator, Larry Platt.
Pretty much everything I have in my little report here. We're gonna try to move the docks, some of them, early next week, which was the contractor that's gonna do its idea. Kind of just tides are good, and be nice to get some of it done now, you know, while we can, because weather-wise, you know, it could go on, you know, before we can move them. So we're going to move the big wooden one and a couple of the skiff loads, hopefully, Monday or Tuesday. And then at the end of the month are some other large tides where we can move the big main metal steel float and the other skiff floats. Hopefully then. And if that doesn't work, just have to wait until mid-November, might be another opportunity, or the end of November. And you can't rule that out. Possibility of bad weather, but that'll be a comfort to have that those moved. I'm sorry, deer hunters, if you're listening. Just something to ease our minds, get those floats moved into the harbor. But everything else is right here on the report, pretty much uneventful. Take some questions if there are any.
I have a question. You didn't mention bears on the boats this year. It sounded like things were better with trash. I was wondering if you still had the young ones, you know, clambering aboard the boats.
No, I had no reports of any bears on any boats.
That's really good.
In fact, maybe only one or two incidences of a bear cruising through the boat harbor area, you know. And that was about it. As soon as we did put some trash cans out there and a fish waste can for fish waste. Whether or not that helped or not, I'm not really sure. It seemed like bear activity was less this year than it's been, as far as I could tell. But
okay.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Okay, and Janine?
Oh, I just, especially before the new trash receptacles and fish waste container, whatever, went into operation, I just thought that having some water supply nearby to clean the area up would be a good idea. And I actually used water catchment off the little shed out there. That seemed to work okay, actually. You know, wasn't as messy as I thought it was going to be. Having a water supply would be nice. Maybe even available for boaters to pull their boats out. They can rinse their boat out off, and be kind of a nice service, I think, you know. Plus, I need water for cleaning the bathrooms, you know, and from all the way over here, if I want hot water, I got to go to the fire hall or I use the hose out here, but it would be kind of nice to have one a little closer, you know, a supply of water, you know.
So did they give you like a ballpark figure of a cost or how easy or hard it would be? I mean, I'm agreeing with you that it would be a good idea to have water down there. And yeah. I like the idea of having some available to the public as well.
Yeah, I asked the contractor what it would take, and they suggested that to run a feed or a line off the existing well over there in the DRC, and would be cheaper than drilling a new well. Which, I don't know. You know, $3,000-$5,000put in a well or something like that, and you get the well pump and the air tank and the plumbing and all that online. So, but if you just had a line, it's all ready to go. You could have it in service year round, actually, because you can put a winterized valve on it, hydrant valve, they call it. Comes out of the ground and then it drains out after each use. And I don't know why you would need water in the wintertime, but there would be no reason to drain, you know. I mean, you wouldn't have to go through the hassle. It's just an idea. I mean, I'm actually, it worked out pretty good without it, you know, but you guys think that maybe that would be a, you know, needed or whatever. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. Thank you. Any other questions? Now we've got City Treasurer Ben Sadler.
Thank you, Shelley. Congratulations to you and Brian. And thank you to Mike and Kyle for your previous service. So I have a few things to talk about, and I thought I would just stick them all in here, but I'll get through the first part. So far, we brought in 48.4% of our expected revenue for the year in the first 3 months. That's as of September 30th. So I was excited to see that. And then I almost said surprised, but I was excited to see that we're at 24.5% of our total expense. So 3 months into the year, we're at 25%. Seems like exactly where we'd want to be. Obviously, at the end of October, we will have received all of our income for the first quarter. Right now, it's still trickling in, but we should see a huge increase in our income. Of course, it'll dwindle as the next three quarters go along, but still, I thought that was pretty much exactly where we'd want to be. And so something that doesn't show up on this report because it came in after September 30th, I wanted to mention that we have received our community assistant program funds. We received $83,439, which is $3,439 more than we budgeted. And we also received our shared fisheries tax, which I guess we budgeted based on last year's revenue, $632. Unfortunately, this year it was only $244, but you know, what are you gonna do? So that's that. And then something that was supposed to be brought up at this meeting, I brought it up at the work session, is the, and I'm not 100% sure why I couldn't get it reading the language of the policy, but at the October general meeting, we're supposed to say the amount of room tax income from last fiscal year, which was $109,714.97, half of which is the maximum available to GVA for next fiscal year, which is $54,857.49. Not sure why we say this in October, but that's what the policy says here. It says that the city treasurer shall tally the room tax from the prior fiscal year and present that to the mayor and the city administrator for budgeting purposes during the October general meeting. So now you all know that. And that's it for city treasurer basic information, unless you guys have questions, which I'd be more than happy to answer.
Thank you, Ben. Any questions? Janine?
Yeah, thank you. So just one question, as we were looking at the list of putting things into the budget, the changes. And so there was a ballpark figure of the $69,000 extra. And I'm just curious if you could just give us some general information in terms of what were the accounts that accounted for more money than we predicted? So what did we get that extra money from?
Oh, okay. So quite a bit of it was from federal revenue that was FEMA money that we had been waiting on, that Kathy worked very hard to get us. I can't say the exact amount. Maybe she has a better idea, but we did bring in $220,000 in disaster assistance from FEMA. So that would leave us with about $128,000 as far as the carryover goes. Sorry, I'm just having a problem seeing it here. All of our taxes came in above what we expected. I don't know why. Almost like I'm missing a piece of paper. I just got my papers out of order. So $30,000 in retail tax that we brought in beyond what was budgeted, $5,000 in remote sellers, $10,000 in room tax, $7,000 in fish box tax. So it was, you know,
more than we had budgeted.
All more than we budgeted. Great. For in fiscal or FY23.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
And then I do have another question in terms of the monies that we are allocating now into the budget. Do you know, like, which ones of them were already had been asked for by the departments but not given when the budget was made, and or which ones are new asks?
Okay, so the only money that was kept out of the budget as far as asked for money was the money that the library had asked for, the additional $5,500. Each department understood going into it that I was reducing their building maintenance to help us balance the budget. But once we knew what the carryover would be, that money would be restored to the FY23 levels as long as the money was available. Mm-hmm. And so no one had any problems with that. The money that the DRC asked for was to replace equipment that they would have continued to use, but needed to be replaced. So that was the little bit that they asked for. The additional training was based on the recommendations of Dr. Vaught and the Soul's additional training requests. No money was added to marine facilities, and the money we added additional training and travel funds to admin based on three council members going, Liesl needing additional training, and, you know, the rest of the admin staff going to the AML conferences and stuff like that. Stuff that Tom didn't necessarily go to that Kathy is going to. So we bumped up the travel and training for those as well.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah. Thank you, Shelley.
And our administrator, Kathy Leary, next.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to present this and welcome new council members and returning council members and new mayor, vice mayor. I went over some of this in the work session, but for the public and new members, I went to the Southeast Annual Conference. I've included in my report their mission so you understand what they do. And they try to promote economically healthy and sustainable communities in Southeast Alaska. I did include the meeting agenda as an attachment so you can see what was going on there in case you have any additional questions about any of the presentations. Again, there was was interesting the presentation of the numbers, Southeast by the numbers, because Davis had one of the highest positive economic outlook percentages of Southeast cities. And after I returned, well, I had noticed that they only had three respondents, and I thought, well, how could they make this sort of a data analysis based on only three respondents? And when I came back, I passed some of that along to one of our resident data gurus, and also who passed it along to one of our business people, who also thought it was odd because they had never even been contacted, so they didn't know the methodology of which they were preparing these data analysis. So now the company and the woman who does this is now in touch with some of these folks, and she is glad to have a new way to reach out to them, because we all question the accuracy of the data based on the outreach, I guess. So it looks really good for us, whereas one of the business community members who responded, who wasn't contacted, said she hadn't heard that it was as rosy as what they were showing in the reports. And the reports are here. In case anyone wants a hard copy, there's also reports online. One is Southeast Alaska by the numbers, and one is Southeast Alaska Economic Plan. So you're welcome to look at that or look them up online if you'd like. But it did show our payroll growing and our business outlook growing quite significantly, like second or third in most instances of Southeast communities. It was suggested that it could have been from, you know, post-COVID and then new park employees, or pre-COVID and then new park employees post-COVID, but that is based on State of Alaska Department of Labor data. And I know for a fact that they don't capture that, or at least that's what I was told several years ago from when I used to work with that data for our TVEP state training funding, that they don't get federal employee information. So that means it's predicated on other revenue sources and business expenditures or hiring other than the federal government. So that would be another good thing to find out is how did we get that high? another item of interest was the mariculture presentations. Been talking to Dan Lesh and Bobby Hudson about the interest to put on a presentation here at the community center as sort of a economic diversification potential for the area. And hopefully we'll be able to do something with that maybe the second week in November. But it's not nailed down yet, and we're not sure of the interest yet, but both of those folks could present, and it's the perfect opportunity for the community to look at, you know, entrepreneurship and diversification in the area. So discuss the electrical rate increases with Curtis Thayer from the Alaska Energy Authority. He made his presentation. He can't really do a lot about it. They tend to help people out more for infrastructure to reduce rates, but they don't really deal with the rate setting themselves. I introduced myself to Craig Tornga. He's the new director of the Alaska Marine Highway System. We talked about schedules. We talked about our port. We talked about the fee description being updated on the website, so people no longer think that we're charging the fee. And that's been clarified and cleared up. He also is looking at fleet replacement plan and recruiting new crew members. I talked to Alaska Airlines Regional Vice President about the ongoing support for the Essential Air Service. And I indicated that I would hope that they would extend their schedule beyond mid-August to at least Labor Day like they used to in the past. And she said she was going to look into that. Met with the new Commissioner of Natural Resources and described some of the land allotments we might be interested in, including down at the boat harbor. So that's at least on his radar too. And one of the discussions they had was on investing in Southeast Alaska rural communities and how we should maybe look at our funds in the future toward economic development, not just sitting there to earn and grow. Yes, we need to have some set aside, but do we want to look at investing some of them for economic development opportunities? I attended the scholarship auction on Wednesday evening. And they brought in $60,000, which was the most that they had ever raised. And it was for University of Alaska, but I mean, they had a lot of big time, big money prizes, and there seems to be a lot of people there with deep pockets. So from there, I went to the Alaska Infrastructure Development Symposium, which was co-sponsored by Alaska Federation of Natives, our congressional delegation, and the Alaska Municipal League. There were a lot of general sessions, presentations on state and local cybersecurity, which, by the way, we are part of a sort of a bundled approach to trying to get a grant for that so that we can look at our cybersecurity issues here. They talked a lot about project bundling and what that might look like around the state, trying to get more than one project done at a time so you don't have to mobilize and demobilize for, you know, special little projects all the time. I think it's a grand plan and it's great for them to look at, but there's a lot of issues to making it happen. They had all these sessions of concurrent exhibitors, all the people from the different agencies who were around who helped provide some of the grants and the notices of funding. And then they had implementation work sessions on Wednesday, which I went to, mostly grant stuff. I went to project pre-development for grant writing, to the benefit cost analysis 101 for grant writing, which mostly showed me that we hire somebody to do that and not try to do that ourselves. Addressing the disadvantage and equity in grant applications, which I sent them our paper that Shelley and I wrote to send in to Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, asking them to change some of their rubric for how they determine disadvantaged communities. And we met with our South Coast planner and the deputy director of planning for regional transportation, which they're going to be doing some plans. And I'm hoping we can get like a subcommittee of people from this area to help give input from this community for those plans. So that was my travel stuff. Trevor Richards he's emptied most of the holding tanks. They're super tied up in Juneau, but they're going to make another few trips out before winter ends. So you know anybody that needs to get on the list, they need to get hold of Trevor. Senator Keel and Representative Story will be in Gustavus for a town hall on November 7th, 1:30 at the school and 5:30 at the library. We usually meet with them for a couple hours, but only 3 council members can come to that meeting. So if you want to come, get your name down. We can't have like everybody attend. And like I said, we're working on a bundled application for the community. So we'll talked about this wildfire defense grant. They have a guy specifically working on helping pull all the applications together for all the smaller municipalities. So we have to provide them information, but we don't have to write the whole thing. And again, I want to thank all of our election volunteers and Shelley, who stepped in while we had no clerk, and to all the people who stepped up and all the training that went on, and our new clerk who jumped right in there. And again, we're still waiting to see about the cybersecurity grant, and we're waiting for the grant award documentation. We were successful in getting it, but we haven't gotten the documentation for the grant award for the planning through Village Safe Water for septage in the community. So it's been a busy month, and I don't know if you have any questions.
Brian?
Just one question. I realize this is kind of I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm curious. You mentioned they're encouraging people to put funds towards growth in communities. And I'm wondering if you have, off the top of your head, like I said, big question, kind of a short list of what that actually looks like here on the ground for us. Is that us issuing grants versus applying for grants? What does using community funds to incentivize growth with our pocketbook in Gustavus actually look like? What's putting that into action look like?
They didn't get into the weeds with that, but they did use it as a example of, we were talking about going out and finding funds in all these other places, and people were talking about how much are you as a community putting towards trying to develop some of your own opportunities. And not everybody has deep pockets like that, and people have to be careful. I'm not saying we should be issuing more grants, but maybe if they do this mariculture presentation and we could support interest by sending an interested party to go and see who, might want to start a business, or I don't know, just some little bit of help that would diversify things within the community. Or maybe we, I know I was talking to Elm the other day, and he said he can't find anybody interested in driving for him. Like, he would love to have another employee. And And I said, well, you know, maybe we need to bring someone in and do a class for all these young guys and girls coming through. You know, they can start at the age of 17 and do something that we would fund a class like that, which isn't, it's not inexpensive, but just something local that we support to provide employment opportunities and to provide employees for people who need them.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's the kind of things that you might want to think about.
No, that's great. I appreciate okay. that.
Okay. Anybody else? Oh, Janine.
Oh, it sounds like that was a lot of info that you got from that conference. And I'm looking through the packet and to the Southeast Worker Retention and Turnover Survey. So there's part of the information that you gave had some data, and they asked why people come and stay in Southeast Alaska, and then they asked why do they not come or why do they leave. And so in the packet, it's on page 74 that I'm looking at. And it says that something I think that we could be looking at along those lines of community funds to build community growth, because the childcare is a huge issue. So childcare was one of the three reasons why people leave or don't take jobs in Southeast Alaska. The first one was housing because of lack of or costs. And the second big one was childcare, lack of and costs. And so I think that's something that's really relevant to Gustavus, and that childcare is a huge issue. And we do have in the our city, we have a social services section where we, in the past, when the rookery was viable and going, we did fund them in some fashion, some up to some portion of their budget, not including capital projects. And so that might be something that we look at again. I don't know. Do you, Kathy, know what the status is of the rookery now?
I don't. And I've asked that question when we were trying to figure out last year, I think. I can't remember exactly when. Oh, it might have been when the superintendent had talked to us about potentially helping to fund the preschool portion uh-huh. over there, and he's not gotten back to us. But I talked to Erin about what she recalled was left on the books at the end of the day and what might be happening with that. And she told me when she left what the balance was, and I've asked, and they're just waiting to get somebody to kickstart the whole thing again. So it's not, I don't think it's incumbent upon us to do that until such time as they come forward with a request.
Right.
Yeah.
So I know that the rookery got, or I think I heard, the building that had been the clinic. Mm-hmm. And so is there some active entity that accepted that for the rookery, or?
I honestly don't know. Uh-huh. I imagine there is, because they are still called the rookery, and I saw an advertisement for a calendar going to do. But I don't know any more than that. Nobody has presented any information to us about it. So.
Does anybody else know? Okay, thank you. Oh, and then just one other question on a different topic. When you mentioned, you talked about to Alaska Airlines on the essential air service. Is it only Alaska Airlines that gets the essential air service, or is that given to seaplanes as well?
I believe seaplanes get some of that too. I'm not sure if they get it here, but I think they do. You'd have to go. There's a chart actually on the website for essential air service on how much different airlines get and where they get it from. But I just know that they ask us for either a resolution or a letter of support that we give them. But it's like, why are you cutting off your service mid-August when people are here fishing and doing all kinds of stuff through? And it helps our residents economically, because you can, you know, you're not paying a dollar a pound for freight, and where you can go in for half the price of what the other, airlines cost.
So do, just to get information on it, in the summer when Alaska Airlines comes and they get the essential air money, in the winter, does money come like to seaplanes more, or do we, like, how does it work so that it's, you know, throughout the year, because when Alaska Airlines no longer comes, we don't get a different price in our seaplanes? Because
I'm not sure what their formula is for doing that. I know some of it has to do with just being able to come here at all because we're underserved. But the other part, I mean, there's the mail service where there's a subsidy, but there's also essential air service. So, like Petersburg and Wrangell, same thing, you know, going through there because they're an underserved area. And so I don't know what the formula is exactly, but I know there is one, and I know it's renegotiated. It's appropriated every year. It's a congressional appropriation, so it doesn't mean it's always going to happen, but that's why we write to support it so that it does. But I don't know the formula.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate the handouts in the packet, too. I know that's a lot of work for these to put together, but thank you for doing that. And now we've come to a public comment on non-agenda items. And we'd like to invite Dr. Vaught and Chief Miller, if they'd like to come up and talk to us about what's going on. Can we bring up another chair? What do you think?
My job is to keep Chief Miller honest. And that's pretty difficult. But we're here primarily, well, definitely, to help find new ways to grow the fire department, both fire side and EMS side. This is Chief Miller's first day, so we're just collecting information and ideas, and we're primarily here, if I'm right, to get more ideas from you all. What do you think, what do you see as needs for EMS? I can tell you what I think, but that's for another day, I think. So, you're on.
I can talk about anything, anytime, forever. So when you're ready to go home, you just let me know. My name is Dave Miller. I was the fire chief in Sitka I retired as a fire chief in Sitka, and I spent 25 years with the department there. I retired a few years ago. I came and spoke in Gustavus, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, something like that, to you all. And I spent a few days with the fire department and came up with some ideas that I thought would be beneficial to the community and to the department. And I'll tell you, I love Gustavus. I think I've been to a lot of communities in Alaska. I think there are two places that are totally awesome. One is Sitka and one is Gustavus. Mm-hmm. And I used to tell Mike all the time, you know, Sitka's fire department is number one. And he always said, you were number one. I said, well, we can't have two number one, so you're number two. But that was okay. So I came and did that 8 or 9 years ago. Then came back with my son, and we trained in the department with a rural firefighter program for a few days. Had a great time. We had a dozen or so people, whatever, and got some great training in, and they were a great group to train with. And then you were looking for a fire chief then, and then I recommended a gal, and then I recommended a kid, a young pup, and he came in and took over as your fire chief for 5 years, Travis. And that's my son. And he moved on and he loved it here, and he still does. I mean, he still thinks of this fire department as a great place and this community. He loved everybody here. It was just time, you know, just like everything else, it's time to move on sometimes. So I was asked to come back. Dr. Vaught got hold of me the other day and said, hey, would you come in and let's sort of do that same thing we did 8 or 9 years ago and just see what we could do to benefit the fire department. And I'm more than happy to do that anytime. I think you've got a great department. Like I say, you've got great people here in town that really want to make it work. Everybody loves the fire department. And my goal is just to see what and maybe there's nothing I can do. Maybe it's just the way life is right now. But my job is to figure out how I can help you and how to make it stronger and get more volunteers and stuff in here. I'm going to be here the next day and a half. I leave Wednesday noon or 2 o'clock or something. And I hope to meet, if anybody wants to meet with me and talk to me, I'll be probably at the fire department most of the day tomorrow, or at least part of the day tomorrow, as long as Saul doesn't chase me out. And Saul and I spent some time today with your administrator and and the old guy, the mayor. And we talked about some stuff, and then I went down to the fire department and spoke with Saul for a little while. And I got the great opportunity to run mutual aid with your fire department on an ambulance call today that walked into the fire department. Well, I didn't walk in. I sort of did. Walked into the fire department today while I was there, and we got to deal with that. So it was sort of cool. And Saul, your chief did a great job. I mean, I can't say anything bad about what he did. And then Dr. Bott came in and helped us out with the guy. So it was good. There are a lot of things happening with fire departments right now, especially small fire departments and even larger ones. The city of Seattle in the old days, and I'm talking old days 10 or 15 years ago, when they put out a call for to look for firefighters to join their department, there'd be thousands of people apply. A couple thousand people would apply. And now it's more like 200 or 300. So people don't want to get involved in fire departments and police departments anymore, because I think 9/11 had a big deal with that. I think 9/11 opened people's eyes to say, I could die doing this. Very easily die doing being involved with the fire department or an EMS, whether it be from COVID or burning in a fire or traffic accidents going to and from. There are about 100 firefighters a year that die from one reason or another in the line of duty. So it's not the safest job in the world, but it's not the worst job in the world either. It's really a great job. And as a volunteer, it's even better yet, I think, personally. But volunteers are getting hard to come by. And, Saul said there are, I think, 18 or 20 or so volunteers here, which is really quite a few. But hopefully we can get more to come. And that's my big goal. A lot of the communities here in Southeast Alaska, their departments are sort of null and void at this time because there are no volunteers. And they're strictly volunteer fire departments. I told the story earlier today, the city of Cake. Whenever there's a fire in the city of Cake, there's a lady there. Not sure exactly. I never met the lady, I don't think. She calls me on the phone and says, what do we do? And so she'll hold up her phone, show me the video of the fire burning, and ask my advice on what they should do, because they don't have enough trained people to really make it work. So they're doing all exterior fires, they're figuring out a way to do something. So that's good. Luckily, they don't have a whole lot of fires. So that's even better yet. And at least now we can do video, right away and show the real life thing about it. So it's a good thing. Even my old department, the Sitka Fire Department, we used to have over 100 volunteers all the time. It was just the way it was, 10 paid staff and 100 volunteers. And now we're down to, somewhere in the 75 to 85 category, depending on the day. And there are a bunch of reasons. And some of the reasons were what AML said, why people are leaving this area. Housing is a big thing for our volunteers. A lot of them are young, can't afford to live in Sitka anymore. And if you can't afford to live there, there's nothing available. And, child care is a biggie and not enough money being made in jobs. So hopefully we can, Saul and I and this group can figure out how we're going to make your department even stronger and stronger yet. I'm willing to come back anytime and help you guys. I just want to see it make it work because you got a great place. Like I say, I'll be here all day tomorrow. I'll give you my phone number right now to anybody that's listening. It's area code 907-738-6890. You call me, I'll meet you anytime. Or if I'm not here in town, you can call me and ask me a question anytime. I'm more than happy to do that for you. That's all I have to say. Anybody have anything?
Thank you, Chief. Yeah, a number of our people they're out of town and they aren't able to meet with you. And I'm just wondering if they'll have an opportunity to submit comments to you after you've gone back to Sitka.
They can call me in a heartbeat.
Okay.
Anytime. I'll be in town for 2 weeks in Sitka, and then I'm going to be pheasant hunting for a few weeks down south. But just call me. Even if I'm in the field, I'll stop and talk. It's well worth it to me to do that. Sounds good, over there. I just want to see this area thrive. I mean, I like Mike a lot and the doc. I've known him for 100 years. And we were just talking. We have friends that I'm not going to say 50 years ago, 60 years ago, we have friends that are, united there. So it's sort of a good thing. And anything I can do, anytime you want me to come over here and train with you, I'm more than happy to do it. I don't want anything for it either. Just get me over here.
And Mike?
I don't have a question, but I just want to express my gratitude to you both for being willing to spend the time to help us build our department and identify our opportunities to strengthen the department, strengthen the volunteer force, improve the training, and position us for the challenges that we'll have in the future. So
yeah, and that's a big thing is the future too, planning for those disasters that could potentially happen and stuff. We hope they never happen, and I hope that in my career when I was in Sitka, and we had a couple of them that happened right towards the end, you know, landslides and killed a few people and stuff, and we were ready for it, as ready as you could be, but we still weren't ready what they created. So the thing is to stay ahead of that stuff. And it seems like we're seeing more and more of those nationwide, worldwide. So you never know. Ma'am. Oh, I don't say that.
Jeannie?
Yeah, well, thank you for your help and your support of our community. When, you know, we were looking at the news reports when the fires in Hawaii, my husband and I were like thinking about a grass fire here in Gustavus, and there had been, you know, one many years ago. And when it happened, I mean, it was really scary, and there was no idea where this grass fire was going to go. And we started talking about how now the difference is there's a lot of people who have bulldozers or, you know, tractors and stuff on their personal property. We have one. And we were thinking that an idea could be that this, if the department knew who all had one, because that could be a big thing, could be used in, you know, making a fire line or what have you. And that, you know, so one idea that we had was to have an inventory of who has this equipment and who's willing to, you know, volunteer in the time of an emergency.
Right. And Saul and I talked today. Saul and I talked today, not Saul. Saul, I'm going to get it right yet. About grass fires. And you know, and when Travis was here, that was one of his big things. That was one of his worries was grass fires. And it's on Saul's mind, too. You know, if you go into the Dakotas or Montana or something, and there's a field fire out there, farmers come from all over with their discs and stuff and plow lines around it. So it's not an unknown to do that. I would think in this country, you have to sort of watch how you're plowing lines to make sure you're not, you know, doing anything environmentally damaging along with it. Yeah, it's not a bad idea. And the next idea for fires, at least, is homeowners, you know, have some responsibility in that. And if I'm sure I could go to a lot of houses in this town, because it's the way it is nationwide, people, you know, stack their wood up against their house, their firewood against their house. Trees are growing right up to their houses. Brushes, you know, trees, low limbs are growing right up next to their houses. All of those things are terrible things when it comes to a fire. So people need to take that advantage now and move that stuff away from their places because the weather is changing. Make that buffer line of 20 or 30 feet around your house. It doesn't have to be cut down all the trees and everything, but cut those lower limbs down so the flames can't get to them. And that'll do a lot to protect your house. There's a program out there called FireWise. If you look it up online, that's a great national program to tell people what they need to do and how to do it.
Well, thank you, Chief and Dr. Vaught. Appreciate your coming to the community to help us out and coming to talk to us today.
Anytime. Call the doc. Day or night.
Maybe just one more very short comment. Mm-hmm. I've been in Seattle Fire Department for 2 years, a long time ago, and been in EMS ever since, basically. I feel really strongly about the community, and it's my responsibility in the end that no one is sick or dies on my watch. Mm-hmm. And as we say in the emergency room, and being a volunteer is extremely difficult. It's not easy. You don't go on 20 runs a day like you do in Seattle or Oakland or someplace. So they need training. They need backup. That is enough volunteers that they don't have to feel like they have to go out every night or, you know, on any given night. So anything you can do to help us, Sol, myself, and Dave, get more volunteers. You don't have to be a trained EMT to be a volunteer. You can drive the truck. I can drive the water truck. And so please do anything you can. Being a volunteer is difficult, and we want to make it, give them some pride and some education and make it a better thing to do.
All right.
Make it better for you guys.
Thank you.
So thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care, guys.
And is there any other public comment on non-agenda items? Is there anybody online with their hands raised? Okay, thank you. We'll move on then to the consent agenda. And can we bring that up on the, I guess it is up. All right. Let's see here. Okay, on the consent, we have three items on the consent agenda. FY2407 introduction, providing the amendment of the city held accounts in FY24, which will go for a public hearing on November 13th, 2023. The second one, item 11, is FY24-08 NCO AMLIP Reserve, also for hearing on November 13th. And the third one, item 12, FY24-09 NCO Capital Current Transfer for public hearing on November 13th. Do any members of the public wish to have any item removed from the consent agenda? There don't appear to be any. And do any council members wish to have any item removed from the consent agenda? Brian?
I don't actually want to remove it from the consent agenda, but I'm noticing a typo in one of these, and I want to be sure we have an opportunity to correct it before that's like set in stone after being introduced. So if that requires us to move it to new business, I'd be interested to move FY24-07 so that we can address a typo in that.
Okay. Is that missing NCO there?
No, if it's something we can address as a clerical error, then we can continue with this on the consent agenda, and that would be my preference. So let's do that.
And how do we address it? How do we correct it? We just correct it. Okay. All righty. Looks like Janine has a motion to adopt the consent agenda.
All right, I make a motion to adopt the consent agenda by unanimous consent as presented.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, Brian seconds. Okay. Are there any objections? We're just going to take a pause here too. Okay, are there any objections to adopting the agenda by unanimous consent? Okay. Hearing none, the consent agenda is passed by unanimous consent. And next up is an ordinance for public hearing, FY2406, amendments to Title III, Personnel Chapter 3.05, Section 3.05010. And Section 3.05.020, introduced September 11th, 2013. And Brian, did you, let's see here. Okay, the time is 8:26, and agenda item 13 is open for public testimony. Do any members from the public wish to speak? Okay. Okay. And apparently no members from the public wish to speak. Hearing no more comment, it is 8:27 and public hearing for FY24-06 amendments to Title III Personnel Chapter 3.05010 and Section 3.05020 is closed. Now we need a council member to make a motion to approve the agenda item.
I move to approve FY24-06, amendments to the Title III Personnel, Chapter 3.05, Section 3.05.010, and Section 3.05.020 as introduced September 11th, 2023.
Okay, that's Brian making the motion. Is there another member seconding?
I'll second that.
Okay, Jim has seconded the motion. Okay, and the motion is to adopt, I believe, FY24.06 amendments to Title 3- Personnel, Chapter 3.05, Section 3.05010, and Section 3.05020, introduced on September 11th, 2023. And does anyone want to discuss or debate the motion at this time? Okay, are we ready for, I know we've discussed it at some length, particularly during the last work session. Are we ready for a question? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say for our new council member, is there any interest in having an explanation of what we're voting on here before you make a vote on this?
Yes, that would be great, actually.
Okay. Your mic's off there, Shelley.
Sure. The purpose of this was really to take out of our code the list of holidays and instead reference our policy and procedure, which is adopted by resolution. For we have a policy and procedure for employee benefits, and that policy and procedure lists holidays. We can adjust policy and procedure more easily, and we did recently to add add one holiday. And I think that was Martin Luther King Day. We would have had a conflict between our policy and procedures written and the ordinance. So we decided it was more flexible to have those listed in policy and procedure. So the ordinance has changed, deletes a list of holidays and refers to holidays is listed in the policy and procedure. Is there anything else in that I'm not thinking about? City administrator, maybe?
I think you got everything.
Did we cover it? Okay.
Yeah. It was just the holidays and this ordinance change.
Was there anything else that
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you say, administrator.
Yeah, that's okay.
No, I mean, we along with this, we updated the policy and the procedure to make a few changes to bring current, to put the holidays in, but we also updated being able to issue benefits to new employees without having to wait for them to go through a probationary period, so they would start accruing and being able to use their leave without having to wait a 6-month period to do so. And so that kind of went hand in hand with this, but the ordinance change itself was just to remove the holidays. So the ordinances are harder to update and harder to update online, and they also cost money to do that with our vendor that deals with all that. So we thought by taking them out, if we ever changed any kind of holiday or added one or subtracted one, we wouldn't have to go through that process. So
thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, are we ready for roll call vote? Okay. Could the clerk do the roll call vote?
Yes. Councilmember Taylor.
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop.
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor.
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll.
Yes.
Ms. Mayor Owens.
Yes.
The vote passes.
Next. Okay, now we are don't have any items and unfinished business. I'm sorry. We don't. Oh, thank you. And so we're moving on to new business. There are three items. The first is to award RFQ FY24-02 emergency gravel stockpile. Item number 14. Do I have a motion?
I move to award the contract for the emergency gravel stockpile to Glacier Bay Construction for the response to RFQ FY24-02.
Okay. And is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. And Kyle seconds it. Okay, and the second for the motion is to award RFQ FY24-02 emergency gravel stockpile.
Let me give us some.
Please, thank you, Mike.
Okay, I can. For those wondering what we're doing here, we put out an RFQ to develop an emergency stockpile of gravel down at the boat harbor next to the driveway that runs into the septic storage tanks for the purposes of having gravel available at times when the gravel pits may be inaccessible. Often they're flooded. Or sometimes the Wilson Road is in poor condition and we're hesitant to do a lot of heavy hauling on it, but we need gravel. So so we put out an RFQ to haul gravel from the city pits, from the city-owned gravel, and stockpile it at the site that we designated by just to the left of the entry road to the septic storage tanks. And we had three bids from three different contractors to do that. The low bid was from Glacier Bay Construction, and I believe it was $6,100. I'm looking at it on the screen. So this would award that contract. Yeah, there you see the bids. And this would award that contract so we can get that stockpile put into place and be ready should we need it during the winter.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Sure.
Can I add just one thing to that?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to also add, sometimes we get requests where we need to maybe fix the roads in places over here and not over there. And like Mike said, you know, even if they could get gravel, then they make that road bad by going up and down the road to get gravel.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to repair that road.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they're only going to be needing to haul gravel down a road over here, then they can just go there and get it and leave that road alone. So that was another reason. So they're not duplicating getting the road hammered just by going to get gravel to fix another road. So that was, I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. That's a good explanation. And do any members of the public want to comment on this? All right. Is there any debate? Does anybody want to talk about it? It sounds like it. Are we ready for the question? Looks like we are. And do we have a motion?
Yeah, we have a motion already. Yeah.
That's okay.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you please give us a roll call?
Councilmember Bishop.
Yes.
Councilmember Makowiak.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor.
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll.
Yes.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay, we missed the new member.
My apologies. You're not on my cheat sheet on my screen. Rachel Patrick?
Yes.
Thank you. The vote passes.
Item number two is contract extension of RFQ FY23-01RM for snow removal. And I believe Kyle has a motion.
Yeah, I move we extend contract for RFQ FY23-01RM section 215 for snow removal to Glacier Bay Construction for their response to RFQ FY24-03.
Okay, and could either the administrator or give us an exclamation?
Okay. Well, we didn't get any bids on the snow removal RFQ. And part of that reason is that we didn't put a guaranteed amount in there like we had in the previous year. And nobody wants to bid on something that they don't really have a guaranteed income for based on the insurance costs that it costs for snow plowing, based on the equipment that they have to get and maintain. There was a sanding contract in there. And even though they did a little bit of sanding last year, it was like a borrowed truck that's kind of, you know, they have to really treat tenderly in order for it to work. So in order for them to be able to bid on something, they have to have a little bit more of a guarantee. And, you know, hopefully moving forward, when we go to do roads things again, you know, we might even want to look at doing, you know, bidding out a 3-year contract so people know what they have and know what they can expect. The other thing about snow plowing is, you know, you got to have somebody here. You got to have your equipment ready. It might not snow for 2 months and then it might dump for 3 days and you can't be, you know, down in Tahiti. You have to be here. So if they bid on it. So this was our way of being able to extend and give them what they needed. Because nobody else bid on it, we could do a contract extension from last year. So there was nobody, because nobody else bid on it. So I don't know if Mike, you have something else to add. There's probably something I forgot in there, but.
Yeah, I think that's, that's pretty fair. I'd mentioned that we have had problems getting a snowplowing contract year after year. It's been a real common problem just because of the people maybe not thinking they're going to get enough business during the winter to make it worth the cost of having the insurance, which is very high for municipal snow plowing. It's unfairly high, really. And then there's the cost of equipment, having the equipment ready with the plows mounted. And then you may or may not have snow. And some years we have a lot of snow, and some years we plow only maybe 3 or 4 times. So it's always been a problem. And I think I'm very grateful that Glacier Bay Construction was willing to offer to renew their extend their contract from the last year with no increase in the cost or anything, despite inflation and so forth, in order to assure that our community has the service available if we need it. So, and I do think we're going to have to find a new model for this, and maybe a new model for our whole road maintenance operation that provides some more assurance for contractors and also gives us some assurance that we're not going to have to
wonder whether we'll find anybody to snowplow as the season comes close. So yeah, that's the kind of the reasoning behind this. And again, I'm very grateful that Glacier Bay Construction offered to do this.
Okay, thank you, Mike and Kathy, for the summary. Just to confirm, do we have a second? We have the motion.
Okay. I'll second.
Thank you, Janine. Janine, bye. So are we ready for the call of the question?
Public comment, if there is any.
Thank you. Is there any public comment? Motion? Nothing online? Okay.
Nope.
And council comment? Anybody want to comment on this?
I'll briefly note, we talked about this in the work session, and I just wanted to note that we now have a copy with the unit costs per section, which obviously none of us seem to be in the mood to try and haggle this for stated reasons and then some. But I appreciate that due to some of the work we've done on these roads, I'm trusting that that's why we're no longer excluding a bunch of roads as were previously excluded. So that's due to some of the work we've done. So just if anyone were looking through this contract, you can note, you know, put the email or the letter and the contract together and note that the roads that say they're excluded on the side are not actually excluded in this contract extension going forward. So just for clarity's sake, and to mark my appreciation for getting that in the packet as I requested in the work session.
Okay. Are we ready? Okay. Madam Clerk.
Councilmember Makoviak.
Yes.
Councilmember Patrick.
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor.
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll.
Yes.
Madam Mayor.
Yes.
Councilmember Taylor.
Yes.
Councilmember Bishop.
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay. All right. Item number 16 is a motion to write off ambulance bad debt from 2020 to 2022. Did you want to
yes.
Motion?
Yes. No, thank you, Madam Mayor. I move that the City of Gustavus writes off the following ambulance service debts from FY20. Total of $620.90, FY21, $1,241.80, and FY22, $2,469.30, for a total of $4,332 as uncollectible.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, Brian seconds. All right, the motion is to write off the following ambulance service debts from FY20, $620.90, FY21, $1,241.80, and FY22, $2,469.30, for a total of $4,332 as uncollectible. Is there any public comment on this matter at this time? Comment. Could we have a summary about? Yes.
Yeah, I could do that as the maker of the motion. Mm-hmm. This is something we have to do just about every year. Most of these are debts from cruise ship transfers for medevacs, people that don't have insurance or they're out of state. And they're beyond our reach for collecting. The these bills of this size are not worth the effort to try to collect, and particularly when you probably will be unsuccessful. So we routinely write these off. We do collect a lot of insurance payments for cruise ship transfers, and it's an important service that we provide, and if we have to once in a while serve somebody in need and we don't get reimbursed, it's okay, in my view.
Okay, and I'm assuming this is for the ground ambulance component of the...
Right.
Okay. All right. Are there any comments or questions? Yes, Brian.
Just one quick comment, if I might. And this is maybe something I would have been better off asking during the work session, but it's notable the trend in, I guess, in the increase in the amounts of debt we're writing off year to year. And it's hard to tell if I am seeing an actual trend or if I'm conflating that because there's the obvious decrease in tourism that occurred in FY 20 and 21. So I'm wondering if, and this is probably a question maybe best asked for to our treasurer, but Mike might have context on this as well, or Sol, who happens to be in the room. But I'm mostly concerning, or I guess questioning, is this a return to normal or is this an increasing trend?
I can answer that if you'd like. So there's not a trend in the past. Sometimes it's the amount of an ambulance call is about $600. So two is 1200, four is 2400, one is 600. In the past, we've wrote off two or three at a time. There was a period of time where we didn't charge for ambulance service, so we didn't write off anything. But this is, it's not a trend. It just happens to look that way in with these three. The currently FY23 has two, so it would have gone back down from FY22.
Perfect. I appreciate that, because you know you only have to double something so many times before it's $1 million. So.
All right. Are we ready for the question? Are we ready for the call of the question? Okay. All right. So the question is a motion to write up ambulance bad debt for FY20 through 2022 and the amount of ambulance service debts from FY20, $620.90, FY21. $1,241.80 and FY22, $2,469.30 for a total of $4,332 as uncollectible. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Patrick?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Driscoll?
Yes.
Madam Mayor?
Oh, sorry, that would be me. Yes.
Councilmember Taylor? Yes. Councilmember Bishop?
Yes.
Councilmember Makoviak?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay. Next item is City Council reports. Are there any council members wishing to make a report about any special projects that they're working on? Next, after this.
This is Jim Mack. I just want to report that the Safe Streets and Roads for All application that we submitted in August, they haven't really come up with any answers yet or okayed things, but they did have some questions for us about a month ago, and that was good. And I think that means that they didn't dismiss our application out of hand, and we'll just keep our fingers crossed.
All right. Does anyone else want to report? Hang on, Janine.
So just to restate what I said at the work session, the beach wheelchair from Sail did arrive, and it's here in the city office. It's not as serviceable, I think, as maybe we were hoping. We tried a test drive just here on the carpet, and it was fairly difficult to push, so we need to take a look at it a little more. And I think also continue to look at one that would be more functional.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And then our next item is the mayor's report. And I was remiss in not thanking and commending Mike for a really fine career as mayor and for continuing to help me out as I stumbled through this. So thank you very much. And can you give us your report?
Yeah, I guess I could. You can, of course, read it. I probably don't need to hit, you know, go over it in detail. I am really pleased that we have the staff that we have, and we've gone through some staff changes that are always a little bit disruptive, but people pulled together and worked to fill in and cover and
and our previous clerk continues to help out. So that is, has really helped. And we're so pleased to have everybody in their new positions, and we hope they that everybody is able to be productive and so forth. So I listed a lot of things that we got done this year. I don't need to go through them, but I am glad that we got a lot of good projects done with the help of all of our staff and our contracted project manager, John Berry, on some of them too. So I mentioned that our city services continue to run well in the background because we have a dedicated staff and good employees who are every day working to provide the services that our community has come to expect and to do so very well. We have a number of infrastructure projects open that I hope to see us get done still this year. The Salmon River Park playground equipment addition, the manufacturer is supposed to be shipping the equipment in the middle of this month. And so we'll be putting out an RFQ for installation of that equipment here in the next, probably this week. We are still working on finding funding for the Good River Bridge repairs. The bridge is not in any danger, but it's a 1985 structure and is showing some wear and tear that you would expect for 40 years of service. And we're trying to find some money from various grant sources in the state and so forth to make the repairs that will make sure that that bridge is good for another four decades. Our city administrators continue to work well with the Alaska delegation to find funding for our DRC building and the compost buildings. Those are important projects that will position us to serve the community on solid waste stream effectively long into the future. We continue to look for the bike pedestrian side path funding. I have to, of course, credit Councilmember Muscoviac for pushing this project for a number of years, and he has correctly identified the fact that we have a road with 25 and 35 and 45 mile an hour speed limits along the length of it, but we have in some cases no shoulder whatsoever for people on bikes or walking, and the mix of pedestrians and bikes with traffic going at those speeds is not something that is really a safe condition. So that's a project that we need to continue to work. We need to do more work on Wilson Road drainage. I was watching the river levels last night, and they were getting up to where to over 15 and a half feet at the gauge, which is up near where the Salmon River passes near the gravel pits. And if it gets up above about 16 and a half, we can get overflow into the pits. And if it's a lot, like in December 2020, we can get enough that the culvert that directs flow from the pits into the east side airport ditch can't handle it, and we can get floods onto Wilson Road. And so we've done a lot of ditching on that road ever since the 2020 floods, and we need to continue to work those projects, including the one, Madam Mayor, that you pointed out, that the need down near the liquor store and so forth, where we don't usually have an overflow problem reaching that point from the pits, but we do have when we have heavy rain, that
portion of the road is pretty flooded and the properties around are too. So that's one that we need to keep working on. Similar issue with same old road. A good part of it was pretty flooded today. And we have a project that we're starting to sketch out with our project manager to provide ditching along a portion of same old road and end of the trail so that we can direct rainfall that flows onto that road into Glenn's Ditch, the Glenn's Ditch system. We also need to clean Glenn's Ditch from Gustavus Road down to the Lagoonberry parking area. And that's a potentially expensive project. And so we're going to have to do some work to specify that one carefully and put it out to bid. We asked DOT to clean it. It used to be their responsibility. It was their drainage easement, but they no longer claim responsibility for it. They've said their easement with that has expired after 50 years. So it's probably something the city is just going to have to do. That we depend on that ditch being able to flow if we're going to take the water that comes down Wilson Road and also that comes out of the airport ponds and get it to tidewater without backing up and flooding roads. So that's a project we're going to have to give some careful thought to, and it's part of addressing the long-term infrastructure needs to help us be a more resilient community with climate change, where we expect more heavier rainfall. I hope that we can do some more heat pump installations. The one here for City Hall has been a successful thing, and we were fortunate to get that for free from the manufacturer, Mr. Cool. And we need to develop a project with a scoping document to present to the council to expand that so that we can put heat pumps in some more of the buildings, other buildings, if the council wishes to do that. All of those relate to, or most of those relate to, my concerns about making us a more resilient community so that we can deal with flooding from atmospheric river events, from heavy snowfall events that can really tax our ability to keep the roads clear, wildfire that we talked about earlier tonight with Chief Miller. There's always a potential for earthquake damage here. Tsunamis can affect the shoreline areas, the boat harbor, and there can be mass casualty events, aircraft accidents, and that sort of thing. So our response to being, or our approach to being, a more resilient community needs to include both infrastructure improvements and working to build the capability of our emergency response operation. And so that's the that informs our emphasis on assistance from Dr. Vaught and Chief Miller to help us plan to be better prepared for these things and build our response capabilities accordingly. Thing that I didn't have in this that came up just in the last couple of days since I drafted this for the deadline last week. I got a heads up call from Jeff Jarvis, who's the airport manager, to alert us to the what he is hearing from TSA, which is apparently taking the position that if we do not have a law enforcement officer here who is capable of, who has arrest capabilities, that can be assured to be on site or available every day that the jet comes in, that they will not approve Alaska Airlines to come into Gustavus. And so that could have a major impact on us economically.
We don't have an official recommendation on that from DOT yet, and I asked Jeff Jarvis to ask his manager to identify what their recommendations are with regard to that, and to forward them to the city. So, Madam Mayor, that could be a big task for your leadership to take us through the question of whether we put on a VPSO, mm-hmm. and would probably have to be two VPSO officers to make sure that we have somebody here, you know, every available 7 days a week whenever the jet's coming in. So that's a heads up. We'll see what they do recommend, but that could be just what pushes us over the line into finally doing something that some people wanted to do for a long time. So I think that's all I had, except that I was really grateful that we had two fine candidates who stood for election and who were willing to put their name on the line. I'm just really pleased that our local democracy continues to roll on, and our community makes good decisions about who to put on the city council, and we can be proud that that our democracy is working here locally. That's all I have. Thanks.
All right. Okay, this is a time for additional questions and comments that are not part of the agenda by the city council members. Does anybody want to comment? Yes, Kyle.
I'd just like to second what Mike said about the candidates joining us. It's a big deal. Thank you. And also offer my thanks to the former mayor, Mike Taylor. Thank you for all the work that you put in and all the leadership you've shown. Much appreciated.
All right. Okay. And if any members of the public wish to comment on non-agenda items, now's the time. You're not hearing any? Is there any further business? Okay, since there does not appear to be any further business, meeting of adjourned at 9:05. I'm sorry, you're smiling.
Looks right. Thank you.